my number one car amongst all is a Mira.
Yes.
But it's like steering a tractor. The steering wheel's horrible. Yes. But it doesn't. But here's the deal. It doesn't matter. Look at it.
Yes.
Look at it. It's the sexiest sex on wheels. So people were willing to pay a crap ton of money to own the coolest looking thing on the planet. And it didn't matter if it had wind noise and you could the carburetors lit on fire, which it did.
Yes.
And your sitting was horrible.
Yes.
And in a Countach, you put the window up and you lean out on the freaking sill to even tilt back the thing up. Yeah. Nobody cared. Why? Because look at it.
Hey, welcome to Car Guy Confessions, brought to you by ARP. I'm Jeff Smith. This is my car buddy Cam Benty and car builder Steve Strope. And we're going to tell you some stories. So we'd like to thank our sponsor, ARP. I build lots of engines as part of the stuff that I do, and I use them exclusively because they're fantastic. I don't use stock bolts because it's just so dangerous. So especially engine stuff is really, really good. And Steve, you use them for building cars, right?
Yeah, I need them. They're an insurance policy for its internals on an engine. I know it's long-lasting and durable and done. They're properly engineered. And also, it makes everything we do look even better. It's jewelry for your car.
Right.
I was going to say the same thing. The stuff looks so beautiful coming out of the package. I mean, it's all oiled and it's ready to go. I mean, sometimes you just like want one on your desk that you can like look at and play with, that kind of thing. But I've used them all the time, and I use them in a lot of racing stuff.
So check them out at arp-bolts.com or check out their catalog. You'll find everything you're looking for. So without too much ado, what's happening? So you want to start?
I'm trying to beat my friend out of a '67 Mustang. Ooh. Pretty quick. He's got two of them in his backyard, two fastbacks, and so I'm working on that because I have plenty of plans for those, and I think that would be some fun stuff to get into. I haven't built a Mustang. I had a '69 Boss 302 that was one of my favorites of all time. So if I can get that going, that'd be great. And I'm doing some writing for a lot of different folks. So Henry and his Mustang book, Kelly Blue book, Auto Trader. I like to write something fun once in a while. So I'll try for something else. There you go.
Steve's always working on fun stuff. I was just over at his shop yesterday, so.
Yeah, I am doing my usual daily routine of driving my employees nuts. And for those of you out there, there's other people in the room telling me to do things, which is fun. So what do you want me to move this or move my head? There we go.
There you go.
Yeah. And earlier they said my voice was creepy when I did this. So a lot of cool projects. Really enjoying driving my 64 Oldsmobile around.
That is a cool car, which I'm very, very, very
honored is going to be in some upcoming pages of Hot Rod Magazine. Editor John McGann, they did a photo shoot with George.
Okay.
Down in the studio. For those of you who don't know.
Was that just recently?
We shot it like last month.
Okay, cool.
Nice. Something like that, a month and a half ago. So that'll be in an upcoming issue. So I'm always honored to be in the pages, as you know.
And that's good to do that now because...
Oh, stop with the doomsday.
Don't do that. but to get back... Get the Oldsmobile is unbelievable, though.
I mean,
to be honest with you,
this is not just
a 64 Oldsmobile.
It's a nice car.
You said about the one that I have.
That's right. Okay, I haven't seen yours, but I got to tell you that Oldsmobile is a typical Pure Vision, suck up here. But anyway, but the bottom line is the Pure Vision stuff is beyond belief in terms of how cool it actually is.
So
when he says 64 Olds, it's not,
It's way beyond that. They can go look it up. But it's all the little stuff, the stuff that we were talking about the other day about your car.
There's a ton of stuff, the little details that
most people just run right past.
Yeah, or they wouldn't know because they hide it.
Right. So that's the mark. It's like when we were talking about Scott Sullivan's Henry J.
Anything he touches.
But especially the Henry J. I don't know if you've ever seen a Henry J before, but Henry J's driving on the road, they look like they're going like this. They're like they're driving uphill. And Scott's car, the red car, is exactly the opposite. It has this perfect rake to it, and it looks spectacular. And I asked him one time, I said, how'd you do that? And he goes, he said, the left front fender alone, there are something like 17 cuts in the fender.
There's a ton of cuts
He says, if you had like Superman X-ray glasses and you could put them on and look at that fender and see where the cuts were, he said the front fender would look like a Kansas road map. So, and then I said, but once you've done that, he goes, then I have to cut up the hood. I have to cut up the bumpers.
It's a domino effect all
the time.
And he's a master at that.
thousands and thousands of hours, and you get this, some people get this impression that, okay, he's some really spectacular shop, you know, where it's, you know, it's 10,000 square foot and he's got three guys working for him and all this stuff is going on. And the reality, he builds all this stuff in a two-car garage in the driveway behind the his dad's house.
Yep.
And you know, and that's the mark of a true craftsman, right, where he just does this. And he doesn't know that he can't.
Yes.
That's the best part about it. And that, he just does not know that he can't do it.
And that's my quote when I've done a lot of interviews over the years. They're like, what's your thing of building all these, you know, your shop doing all this amazing work? Because I got to say my shop, it's my guys too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it started with just me, but the higher echelon cars have been with a great team of people. But, my thing was I'm too stupid to know I can't. So I just went and did it.
Yeah.
I remember the Boss 9 69 Mustang.
Anvil Mustang.
Anvil Mustang. I mean, just, you know, when somebody does a poor job, you can spot it.
Right.
When somebody does a spectacular job, it just looks like a factory thing. I remember the cuts that you did to the rear fenders.
Oh, yeah.
And the shoulders and all that other
everything
stuff.
Everything was changed on the car, but you'd never know it was
the one that had the cantilever suspension in the back, too?
Front and back cantilever.
All that stuff was crazy. You know, but you couldn't see it initially, and you needed a walk around with Steve or one of the guys to say, "Hey, we cut it here, we cut it here, cut it there," and you go like, "Well, I had a '69 Mustang, didn't look like this.
Doesn't look like
this.
Wasn't
even close to looking like this." So.
Or like when I did the story on a long time ago, when I did the story on the smoky unit Camaro, the '67 one that he did,
7/8 size.
It was
a Chevelle. It was 7/8.
Well, it really wasn't. It wasn't. But what he did was, and like, you know, Mike Eddy was the guy in charge of that car. He was one that did all stuff. And so when I did that story for Hot Rod a long, long time ago, the only mistake we made was we should have shot the car next to a stock '67 Camaro, because then you would have seen just how radical that car really was. But the nose was drooped. So when you drop the nose, which reduces the aerodynamic drag, now the bottom of the fenders, as you well know, are too tight, and the top of the fenders are too wide. So you just cut them and move them, weld them in, put pipe-shaped pieces in there, laid the windshield back, you know, did all kinds of crazy stuff to this car, to the extent that he put a 9-inch Ford rear end in it, but put a 12-bolt cover on the back of the 9-inch, so it looked like a 12-bolt. So you glanced on the car, looked at it, and said, okay, it's a 12-bolt. No, it was actually a Ford 9-inch. So that's the kind of stuff those are hidden to.
Yes.
There was stuff that Mike was showing me that I had no idea. You know, you look at this and go, he laid the windshield back. It's like, well, it doesn't really look like it. He goes, well, if we parked a 67 Camaro next to it, you'd see it instantly.
According to, like, talking to Tower about those cars, the orientation was that because of stuff like that is where they ended up with those windshield templates.
The templates, everything.
The NASCAR guys put those templates on the front of them because they couldn't
didn't
see
say
the,
I couldn't.
Right.
Couldn't say
it. Right. Well, and that's what he did with the Chevelles. He cut it, moved it around, the 66 Chevelle, and then Ford came back with what they called the banana, the big banana car, which Vic also has.
Yeah.
You know, he had both those cars. And that car, they called it that because, A, it was yellow. It was a Holly Farms car, but it was shaped like a banana.
Yeah.
because aerodynamically it worked better.
Well, the stuff that they did was so amazing. You know, those are the stuff, like, you know, I think that's probably a lot of the ingenuity things that you saw when you were younger and started to integrate them into the cars that you actually put together.
Yeah, I try a lot of, I pull from the play card of Scott. Tons and tons and tons of work to show people nothing. They have no idea what they're looking at.
They have no idea. Yeah.
It's hiding in plain sight.
Mm-hmm.
And less
which is
more.
Which is the fun. It's kind of
thing.
Like, it's a whole Easter egg thing, right?
Yeah. I that's the thing that I've gotten a lot of compliments about our cars is that it's an Easter egg hunt. You'll go look at the car and then you come back a half hour later and then you'll find more and then you'll find more. And then I'll do a walk around with you and you'll be like, oh, you know,
there were 500 things I didn't see.
And you know what? Growing up reading different stuff about Smokey's cars, I was just fascinated that his front bumper is taller.
Yeah.
It basically goes down, it creates an air dam, and that he would weld flat pieces of sheet metal to the front of the lower control arms to do the same thing, run air around.
And underneath.
And
underneath. So he would box the whole thing for strength.
In that Chevelle, you're not allowed to have a belly pan, which is an aerodynamic thing that
device.
Uses it like land speed. So he cuts the floor pan and drops it down into the car so it's the same level close to the ground as the frame rail.
Yes.
So now he's like artificially making a
belly pan.
Belly pan.
Yes.
And then the vortex generator at the back of the roof, if you look at the side profile, there's this little, that little dip.
Yep.
Nobody would
Nobody saw it.
Genius. Right. Just right. Absolutely. Right. And trick after trick after trick of flushing the glass and all those little things. And the thing is besides the fact that that's just ridiculously cool. And I completely condone cheating and racing.
Well, no, you know,
when it's that cool,
But you know, of course, that he said that that was not cheating because it didn't say
the
in the rule
you
book
can't.
You can't do that.
Right.
And that was his point. It's like he's just reading, which that's why that's why one of the titles, his three books, have you read his books?
Two.
Yeah, the three books, and one of them is The Skinny Little Rule Book. And that's when he went to Indy, was because it had a skinny little rule book. And it's like, so he built the pod car and all those other things. Just astonishing. So
which car was it that had the gas tank in the roll?
Chevelle.
Box? Was that the Chevelle or was it a Camaro?
Yeah. Well, there were fuel lines.
What he had was giant tubing.
Yes.
Right? For fuel line.
Because they did not say how big a diameter or how long.
Right. So it looped back and forth.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like another 5 gallons in the fuel tank.
Right, right. Because they pulled the gas tank out and he drove off. That was a cool shot.
That's official or is that a rumor?
I'm not really sure. Because he doesn't.
Lore status. Yeah, but it probably has. Didn't happen.
My official guy at Tower says that it actually did happen.
Okay. Well, he was probably there.
He probably was there because he used to fight with it. Did you hear what he found?
Did you hear what he found
in his trailer? And he didn't find out because Perkins, you know, remember Perkins?
Right. Perkins?
Jim Perkins told him that this
is. You should give background on who Tower and Perkins is.
Bill Tower is a guy who's been around the car business for a long time. He was a Chevrolet engineer. He worked very closely with Vince Piggins. So the guy was there when all this stuff happened.
Who was the guy in charge of product promotion was his title, but in reality, because I had actually had a meeting with him one time.
I met him too.
And a great guy.
He was the father of the Z28.
The father of the Z28, but he was really product promotion, but he was kind of a PR guy.
Right, he was the race team guy. But Bill Tower ran dragsters, Hemi dragsters, while working for Chevrolet. Go figure that one out. But anyway, the guy has been around the racing cars for forever, and he has an amazing collection. He has one of the original Grand Sports. He has Duntoff's SR2, the lightweight one.
Wow.
He's got a 67 L88, the first one from the Proving Grounds. You know, he's got all this crazy stuff. He's got Earnhardt's Pass in the Grass car, all done up in the Wrangler colors, which is all that cool stuff. So here's a guy.
He was there in the day when Smokey was doing stuff.
His first year was 65. He fixed the big block problem. Chevrolet had a problem with the big block rod bolts. And he actually went to the Lycoming factory, found some bolts that fit, put them in the car. They tested the motor, ended up buying Lycoming bolts to fix the original big blocks in 65, the high-powered ones. But anyway, he was in his trailer the other day. Doesn't live there, but, it's Florida. But anyway, so he had a situation where he went in there and he found this old 289. Perkins validated the very first 289 or 283 ever. Because he got it from Smokey, and it's in his little museum.
The first production 283?
First production 283. Wow. Probably more of a prototype.
So that would have been 57 then.
57.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. First one. There's all kinds of crazy stuff.
Zora Arkas Duntoff's biography right now, which is really fun. And right where I'm at right now is halfway through the book. He just went 150 on the sand at Daytona.
And background for that, Duntoff was the father of the Corvette. He's credited with that and many other things.
He's given that title, but the reality, the Corvette started before he even got the
with
Chevrolet.
Mitchell.
But that was how he got the GM, was he saw the car at the Waldorf Astoria, the prototype, the 53, at the Waldorf Astoria, fell in love with it. And because he had just come from Europe and because it escaped essentially the Nazis and because he was actually a Russian Jew.
Yes.
He was born a Russian Jew and then lived, moved from Russia to Germany, got his engineering degree in Germany and then was growing up in Germany in the late 30s.
Yeah,
and
it
was
bad timing, and saw the thing
move to France.
Yes.
Actually was driving an F1 car on the street as his daily driver because F1 cars were completely different.
Then.
And then eventually joined the French Air Force. And then when they capitulated, basically took off over the Pyrenees and got to Spain and eventually got on a boat to the United States. And I thought when I read the book the first time that I'm going to read about the good stuff at General Motors, and I'll have to get through as in the early days. It was far more interesting, far more interesting to
before
read about all before he even got to America.
Yeah, fascinating stuff.
And actually, even as a GM engineer, drove at Le Mans for Porsche and won in an 1100cc Porsche and won the class.
Wow.
Amazing stuff this guy
did. We're going to need one of our tech guys that are handling the show to, like, down in the comment thing or down there to, like, give the names of each one of these guys and a link to go look up who they
are. It's
called
a footnote.
Yeah, yeah, right. Notes with your feet on them.
Speaking of 1100cc motors, what do you got over here?
So
not an 1100cc.
No, it's a little bit larger than that. That would be, well, it's a 402, so what would that be? I don't know how many.
Yeah, so was that 30 over 396. Yeah.
It's my motor. I just had Steve's guy,
Kelly.
Kelly paint this thing. It's a piece of jewelry. We'll have to show you an image
we'll
of it.
Show you shots of it.
You know, it's like I want to just put it in my living room and just go, you know, I'm an engine guy. I'm into horsepower. I'm into stuff like that. I'm not necessarily into pretty cars. Yep. And it's like I'm looking at this thing going, I don't even want to put this in the engine compartment because it's so nice.
That's right. So you said you had 18 hours. You're right. Kelly had 18
hours.
About
18
hours.
Just
in the painting.
Prepping and painting.
We'll see. Yeah. There you go.
Go ahead and make your comments now if that's ridiculous. And then you can come to my shop and I'm going to go, no. Go back there and clean it some more, clean it again. And then you're still going to get fish eyes on the damn valve covers.
Go ahead and tell me how
18 hours isn't real, and I'll say, well, you can do all the work on those valve covers.
But you're now getting $15 an hour. So that's good.
I've worked up to actually $17.5.
So that's a good deal.
So this motor is going to go into the high school car, which normally sits right here in the shop. Right. And
I think we need to clarify the high school car.
So I bought in 19. This is how old I am. 1970. I'm 16 years old. I'm a sophomore in high school.
That's impossible.
And I bought a 66 GTO, and that car just wasn't fast enough. My best friend in high school had a 327 four-speed Impala, and I couldn't beat him with my 389 four-speed GTO. It's like, you know, kick this thing to the curb.
Wow.
You know, my mom's like, what's wrong with the car? Nothing. It's not fast enough. Mm. So I had two friends with big block four-speed Chevelles. It's like, that's what I want. So it's a whole other story how I found that car. We could do a half-hour show on that, on just finding that car. But essentially bought a 66 SS396 four-speed, 360 horse four-speed Chevelle, marina blue, white interior. This is the original motor out of it. The original four-speed's in it. The chassis is all original. Awesome. And the body's down at Santini. So now we're going to mate this thing for the last time and put this thing together. And then when Pete gets done, then we're going to drop the body on the chassis. And then Frank Sines is going to help me build it because I have very short patience when it comes to stuff like window regulators.
I'll come down.
Oh, man. It'll drive me crazy.
It'll be a feature in our Jeff Smith's Garage how-to series, too, right?
So
you can watch that on a YouTube channel.
Different deal.
So,
there's a little stuff that we're doing.
That's right.
On those topics and dozens of others.
Yes.
You know, we can just burn the bridges with every potential sponsor, I can do just episodes alone on how many parts never fit.
It's called bolt-on, this doesn't fit.
I'm not quite sure they even catalog this right, because this looks like it goes to like a French car.
Well, you know what it is?
Does it go to a car?
So my buddy Frank Sines,
it goes to a car. Yeah,
my buddy Frank Sines has inherited a customer who had a guy build him a 69 Camaro, really pretty car, right. 69 big block turbo 400s Camaro, 69 Camaro. And the guy is he's an attorney, and I think he assumes that, you know, I just paid this guy $40,000. We were talking about that the other day. $40,000 to build this car. He thinks he's invested a lot of money. My friend Frank is saying, no, you've got this thing. You're in it for nickels and dimes. Yeah, this is nothing. And now it's got a lot of issues. So I went out and helped him with the fuel injection a little bit, and we got to run better. And then he didn't like the muffler, so we put quieter mufflers on it. And now he can hear all the other noise, the wind noise and everything else that you couldn't hear with the Flowmaster Super 44s that were just ridiculously loud. And so the concept is the guy really doesn't understand. And I told Frank, I said, you have to somehow explain to this guy that this is not a BMW. You know, this is not a Mercedes. This is not It's not even a new Vogue. It's not even a new Chevy, you know, Bolt. It's you know, and the concept is he paid some guy, a friend of his in Kansas, to build this car for him because the guy was bored. He moved back to with his kids and didn't know anybody and was bored. So he says, here, build this car for me. And which was magnanimous, and I understand that. But, you know, with the aftermarket, to your point, is that there's dozens of manufacturers, and they build their part. And, yeah, it's supposed to fit this car, but I know for a fact that this my Chevelle chassis, the center thing has been, the center crossmember sagged. It has to have. It's 50 years old. It's been abused for 50 years.
I've sagged.
And so it's going to, we all, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
So,
working in there.
You know, so things have changed. And who's to say that that chassis is the same as the the 90,000 other ones that they built? Right. And when they had a wheelbase plus and minus of a half an inch.
Right.
A half an inch.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't happen today, but back in the 60s, like, so? Right. It's a half an inch. What's the problem? You know, so your wheelbase on this side is 115, but on the right side,
do
it's
I get to say that's what
it's 114 right. and a half.
Can I plug
yes,
that in?
Please, go ahead.
So anyway, the point is you've got 900 manufacturers all making products that you're going to dump on this car, and then you have to all make them work together.
Right.
And they're not all going to work together. And
yeah,
so
and a lot of them don't fit anyway.
The job is to make it work, you know, and so you make it work, and then at some point, you say, this is really about as good as it's going to get as long as you've only spent, let's say, now $60,000 to make this thing a really nice car. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want a $250,000 or a $300,000 car, now we're talking about a whole different story.
Right. But the part still doesn't fit.
And the parts still don't fit.
But you're going to make them.
Now we're going to spend the money
to
make it fit.
But the point is that you can go buy a brand new any car is going to be so much better engineered than a hot rodder building a 69 Camaro because you've got this phalanx of engineers to all work together, all phalanx. Towards a single goal, and all the parts, there's only one part. There's only one part for this, you know, for these pieces. There's, well, that's the key, OEM
though,
piece.
Because we were talking about the other day, what people don't understand is you say you get a job. I have to fix my...
Are you counting your steps or something?
Yeah, no. Actually, I got cheater notes on the back. So shut your mouth right now.
Okay.
I will run into individuals who are wealthy and own really, really wonderful cars from the aforementioned companies: Mercedes, BMW, Maserati, Porsche, Lamborghini, etc. And so say you got a guy who's got a new S-Class, he's got about $120,000 into the car, okay? Or so, depending on the year that he bought it and what he optioned it with. And we're going to start discussing a vehicle at $250,000, $350,000, $400,000. Now, that's because, by the way, that is because of his wish list.
Right.
Somebody wants some one-off wheels. My cost on one-off wheels are like $14,000 to $18,000 for a set of wheels. No, I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
Go price them.
Right.
Right? Yeah. So the wish list drives the price up. We're going to hand make stuff. We're going to go get a Tom Nelson twin turbo motor. Mm-hmm. That motor alone, let alone the electronics to run it, the special radiator he's going to tell me that we're going to run to cool it, the air to air intercooler, the air to water intercooler, the special fuel tank and multiple pump setup then strengthening the chassis to handle the 1,200 horsepower.
Right.
There's money being spent everywhere, not just the expensive motor alone. Uh-huh. Right. So the wish list will create. But where I'm going with this is they're like, well, that's really, really, really expensive. And I'll still set them down and go, we're going to be building you a coupe, okay? Mm-hmm. Not like a postcard like mine. I keep touching these freaking things. So... The aftermarket glass is not the same shape as the original.
Right.
They're not.
Right.
And so I literally, at the table, before we've even exchanged money and say it's going to be a Chevelle, I'm going to go, I'm telling you right now, we're either going to put in manual windows so that I can adjust the glass to seal good, not awesome, but good.
Yeah.
And it's going to be hard to crank it down because it's going to be rubbing against the weather stripping. Or it's going to go up really easy. We'll put in power windows, and it won't seal for crap.
And
I defy any of you other builders to chime in here and go, "Nah, you don't know what you're doing." Yeah, right. You're lying. It doesn't align worth crap. They barely aligned in the day when they were new.
Well, they didn't align when they were new.
Right.
They didn't.
And the aftermarket classes at different angles.
Wind noise was exactly the same. Yes.
Right.
Yeah, right.
So I already know, and then multiply that around the whole car.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I just want you to know that when you buy the $500,000 car, it is not going to be close to your Benz.
Mm-hmm.
What you will have is a car that all your other friends on your street don't have.
Right.
You That's
don't,
number one.
You don't, you're not driving the belly
That's
button
number
car.
One.
Right.
But number
Even
two,
as a BMW.
That Benz that cost you $120,000 is the net result of probably what? $30 million?
Oh,
50
easily.
Million?
Yeah. Easily. The development of the company.
And how long has Benz been in business?
Yeah.
1896.
Right. So they've been building.
Been around for a while.
Yeah. They've been building on that knowledge, right?
Yeah.
They have all the modern ways to manufacture a vehicle mm-hmm. at their disposal, and they're going to start with a clean sheet.
Yes.
Yeah.
If they've got a new model,
right.
And wind noise and all that stuff will be taken into account.
Of course.
The stereo system will be designed by an audio company in a simulated room,
right.
Simulating the angle of the glass that the sound is going to be reverberating off.
Right.
I'm serious about this. It's rocket science, right. But that's how a giant mega company who's expecting to sell hundreds of thousands of them
mm-hmm.
can offer you a car that perfect at $120,000.
Yeah, right. Which is a
120.
Deal.
It's a screaming deal for the
right,
work put into that.
Right.
So if you want to hand me $30 million, I will hand you a '67 Chevelle that will be soundproof and have a engineered sound system inside of it.
Right.
And I'll put a freaking massage thing in the back seat for your feet like in my Jack. You know, it's like that.
And Jeff Smith will deliver it.
That, and Jeff Smith will hand you a wreath and a small glass of wine.
That's right. And a horse. And give you a horse. It's pony. Right.
So you've got to
sea biscuit.
The main nice. You've got to do apples to apples.
Right.
You
right.
want and you're like, I can't believe you're gonna charge me $500,000 for this thing and you can hear wind noise in it. You can't compare it to your Benz. You can't. There's
because
millions
they have,
and millions and millions in R&D to make sure that thing doesn't.
Because they have economy of scale.
And on top of
for
it,
them.
Unless I re-engineer the pillars and the posts and the glass and everything, by inherent of its design, I'm going to make a beautiful one. Mm. But I'm not changing their ceiling principles. It's 1967 technology. The window comes up like this and sits against that piece of rubber.
Right.
You know.
And these cars were all built in different factories. I mean, I remember talking to a friend of mine who was a huge 57 Chevrolet fan, and he said that, you know, the different plants had different stampings. Every stamping was different, and every car was different. So if you bought one in, you know, that was made in East Coast, and you tried to put it together with parts from the West Coast, they didn't fit. So what is the surprise in that?
A perfect example
yeah.
of what we're talking about, of just experience, finances, et cetera. You get anybody, and they're one of my favorite cars, and they're still stick-welded pigs, but they're just so cool. They're cool. Talk to anybody who's owned a Lamborghini Countach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They are horrible.
They're horrible.
Yeah. And you can't take a fender off one of them and put on another one because
they're
all handmade. They're
all handmade. Right.
Here's a perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
Lamborghini, back in that day, was a big hot rod shop.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't getting perfection. You weren't getting it. You weren't getting ergonomics.
No.
Yeah.
You weren't getting even an air conditioning unit that even worked.
Right.
You were getting the worst
foot pedal
positioning you could possibly imagine. And most Lambos, again, I'm not bashing them. It's my favorite. My number one car amongst all is the Mira.
Yes.
But it's like steering a tractor. The steering wheel's horrible. But it doesn't. But here's the deal. It doesn't matter. Look at it.
Yes.
Look at it. It's just sexy sex on wheels. So people were willing to pay a crap ton of money to own the coolest looking thing on the planet, and it didn't matter if it had wind noise and you could the carburetors lit on fire, which it did, and your sitting was horrible.
Yes.
And in a Countach, you put the window up and you lean out on the freaking sill to even back the thing up. Nobody cared. Why? Because look at it. And with ARP, it's not just a lot of intake manifolds, studs for heads,
right.
but they also have humongous selection of American and metric that we use all throughout the car, even large bolts that we use on the suspension components, because you want that same strength, that same durability and reliability, right, plus the beautiful looks.
And the stuff outside the catalog.
Right. They have a special order program where if you're a builder and you need some special stuff made, they can do that for you. So it's an amazing, amazing company to work with.
So check them out at arp-bolts.com or check out their catalog. You'll find everything you're looking for.
I went to the factory and the Maserati factory and got a tour with DeLorean as part of this Club Italia thing. I was at CarCraft. Go figure how I got that deal gone. But anyway, so I go to this deal and they show us the whole CNC operation for the engines and the transmissions. And they've got this beautiful deal with little train cars. They take the billet piece, they put it in there, it goes down the rail and it goes up and then all the tools come out and literally there is nobody touching any of it, you know, after it goes into this train car. And the funniest part is, so then we go, and this is in the 80s, Maserati's in the 80s, horrible car.
Yeah.
So anyway, so we go through and we're going this whole tour and we get to the end where it's the marriage, you know, and we've been to factories where we've seen this deal where they put the body and the chassis together.
Yeah,
it's coming together and it's this whole deal. And it's this unbelievable orchestration. You know, they've got guys pulling hoses out of the way and moving things around and the whole bit. So we're in there and there are only two guys in there. So I'm going like, well, they're at lunch break. Got to be at lunch break, right? And there's one guy on the other side who has a rasp in his hand, and he's working on the front, the lower fascia. He's like going, he's literally going like this. And the guy over on the other side
has got a hammer.
No,
I wish he did.
He is physically putting the engine and the transmission together by jiggling them. He's like literally like they're in a little template, a little carriage, and he's putting them together. He's got the clutch all tuned up, and he's like working them. I'm going like, whoa. When did the guys come back? And the guy goes, no, this is it. This is exactly the way we do production. We have a guy who is fitting the bodies, and we have a guy who's putting the motors and transmissions together, and that's it.
Yeah.
So if you come back here in an hour, you're going to see the same two guys. That's all there was to it. So hand-built cars, even back then, with those bi-turbo Maseratis were trash. But unbelievable to watch those guys do hand-built cars, and they cared, you know. Giuseppe was out, eating a sandwich somewhere.
So this is a good segue.
But it's like that deal.
So this is a good segue into something about what's happening with the OEs today.
Yeah.
And we'll try and keep this short because we could probably spend another hour on this whole thing. But
yes,
there was
a
gentleman by the name of Rick Newman who wrote a column in Yahoo Finance that's called Gasoline is Becoming Worthless. So I want to hit some of the highlights here because what
low
we
lights,
have to have
low
remember,
lights
remember
or highlights
60 minutes remember 60 minutes you have point counterpoint
yes
remember that
yes.
This was a long time
Jane,
ago
you ignorance love.
Wow.
It wasn't quite that, but
no, wow. that was the Saturday Night Live spoof.
Yeah, right. So point counterpoint. So this guy's made a point here that he thinks what the future is, and I think he's off base.
I'm glad I'm old.
Yeah. So anyway, so he's so his title is Gasoline is Becoming Worthless, and his point is Morgan Stanley argues that the traditional internal combustion engine, the mainstay of automobiles for more than a century, are destined to become money losers as early as 2030. Let that sink in for a minute. That's less than 10 years from now. I think this guy's way off base. Likely this guy probably lives in New York.
Yeah.
He probably doesn't even own a car.
No.
Right? And he thinks, well, the rest of the world lives the way we do.
Yeah.
And it's really not
true.
Yeah. Well,
and
then he goes on to say, in late January, General Motors said it plans to stop selling vehicles with tailpipe emissions by 2035. That is actually a misquote. What Mary Barrow said was, we aspire to stop selling vehicles.
And that's
tailpipe
a very
emissions.
Different set
yes.
of words.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Yes. Aspire.
So he somehow forgot the word aspire. Because of his agenda, again, this is where you're not getting the truth. It's getting his version of it. So we're just going to give ours. So he goes on to talk about it. And he also mentions in this article a piece of legislation that the wonderful California Governor Newsom signed as an executive order that passenger car vehicles sold in California will be zero emission by 2035. That's 14 years from now.
Yeah.
Now, that's an executive order. That doesn't mean it's law. That just means
no.
It's a really good idea.
Yeah.
Or it's
well,
a suggestion.
That's again, that's a kind of an aspire thing, I think, with
exactly.
him. Unfortunately, it gets taken. Yes. It gets taken as that's going to be the EA.
That's the problem with the general public. They're like, oh, that must be a new law. It's like, no, this goofball signed something that he just thinks would be neato.
We think it would be cool.
Because he wants all his friends.
Right.
You know, all his liberal friends to go, boy, you're really great.
Yeah. Whereas in Southern California right now, every time comes summer, come about July, August, and September, which are the hottest parts in Southern California, that we have on the television, every night there will be these ads for flex alerts. And a flex alert is we need you to turn off all your electrical devices because we don't have the infrastructure to support the electrical demand that's happening right now.
So fast
well, then
forward,
how are you going
to handle a billion electric cars?
Right, exactly. So the point is, we really can't. But we aspire to that because it sounds good. Okay, so the really interesting thing is
that's
he gets into IC
agenda.
Yes,
not
so
reality.
IC engines, internal combustion engines, are on their way out. I talked to a good friend of mine. I won't mention his name because I don't want to get him in trouble. Who works for General Motors, and
if there's a will, there's a way.
And yes, and it's fun to talk to him because he has a little bit different perspective on this whole thing. And he says that really, you know, because of the political agenda we have right now, GM is really being forced to move into the electrical market because otherwise the government's going to put them out of business. And so
and they don't look cool.
And the sad part about all this is that the people that are buying the product aren't even asked whether or not, do you really want? So like in my particular case, my friends all know this, I'm actually negotiating to buy a house back in Iowa because I'm going to move back where my family is.
Sure.
I'm actually moving to essentially a farm that's 20 miles away from the closest gas station. Well, electrical vehicle for people like living in that part of the country is stupid.
Yeah. Not only was it a great point, we were talking about it. Love to see him come up with how they're going to run giant combines.
Yes, exactly.
On the fields. An electric cord, not going to happen.
One of the things that
one
of the things that a GM engineer told me, who actually has worked on the Volt and the Bolt projects, he said, gasoline engines work in IC engines. Let's use the term IC engines.
Right.
IC engines love load. You can put load to them. They will pull down that rat motor right there.
Right.
I could pull that thing at 2,000 RPM at wide open throttle, and it would do it. If I had a good cooling system, it would do it all day long.
Right.
And in fact, they have industrial engines in gas pumping natural gas out of the ground. Running at
yeah.
What is it? 1800 RPM because it's
low.
A 60 cycles. 1800 RPM is the RPM they want to run at for a 60 cycle motor because they're actually driving the electric motors. I think that's how it works.
Because people were finding big blocks in the fields that had been left there.
Well, that was where the whole 496 came from.
Yes.
So the point is, IC engines love load. He said electric motors don't. You run electric motors at very high loads, at very low speeds for any length of time. He said the electrical devices turn into a toaster.
Yeah,
and it burns to the ground.
I see,
but they never say any of that.
Of course not.
Interestingly enough.
So, and think about the battery pack that you would have to have.
That no one knows how to get rid of that waste.
Well, that's a whole other story.
Oh, yes,
but,
it is.
You know, the combine that you mentioned, how big would the battery pack have to be?
Bigger
to,
than
to
the
drive
combine.
That rascal.
Yeah, bigger
when,
than
in
the combine.
Fact, you can run diesel fuel, and if you run it properly, you have very few particulate emissions.
Right.
They're already doing that right now.
Yeah, they just get
and
a black
all very
eye.
Efficient.
Yeah.
So the whole point of this is we're at 95% efficiency on an IC engine from the standpoint of emissions, not from really from fuel efficiency.
95.
We're roughly around 95% emissions compatibility.
Right.
So all this electrical stuff is really going after the last 5%, and we're going to spend billions to try and get that last 5%. So it just doesn't make a lot of sense. And then if gasoline is in fact worthless, let's really quickly, because I'm going to get on my soapbox here, there's nothing wrong with ethanol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. It reduces the carbon imprint that you're going to generate. And it reduces CO emissions. Now, it still will generate NOx. You still have problems with oxides of nitrogen. Mm-hmm. But that's manageable with catalytic converters. And you have a renewable resource. So it doesn't have to be E85. It could be E50. It could be E30. Mm-hmm. You know, E30, you can get 95 octane fuel. You mix 30% ethanol with a 91 octane pump gas, you get an E30 fuel that has 95 octane and it costs less than your pump gas that's at 91.
Right.
So you have, it's less expensive and you have a higher octane. Now you won't go as far with it in theory, but actually if you raise the compression ratio So this is what people don't talk about. Right. If you take ethanol, straight ethanol, let's call it E98. Let's just make it E85 because it's simple because we can get it everywhere. Everybody talks about the fact that E85 won't give you the fuel mileage. That's true, but they're comparing it against an engine that for the last 120 years has been developed to run on gasoline.
Right.
So now let's take that engine and let's use it and let's make it run at 13 or 14 to 1 compression ratio. And now you've got an engine that, my guess, would be at equal to or better than a gasoline engine in terms of fuel mileage. And the power goes up, the efficiency goes up, everything goes up. And what have you lost? Nothing.
Right.
Yeah, you've lost a lot. It doesn't fit the agenda. It doesn't sound cool.
That's where I was going to say.
And the ethanol
you've
fuel.
You've ruined this, Jeff. How am I going to get an election won with keeping these combustion motors?
But people are lazy. People are lazy to the younger generation. Yeah. But people are lazy. They don't want to go and do all this effort. And the thing is that there are agendas with regards to gasoline. There are agendas with regards to electric vehicles. We've got the whole situation about, like we talked about, brownouts and such. Mm-hmm. You know, how do those cars, even today, we're not talking about in the future, how do you plug in your Tesla and make it run if there's no power at your house?
Right, exactly.
So, well, that's so just now, you so in California. You'll have to take the sacrifice. The rest of the world won't have that brownout problem and will live in a cleaner environment.
Right, and oh, by the way, the United States has to do the technology lead on this low sulfur and reducing all these emissions so that the rest of the world, like China and India and Korea, can run unimpeded coal-fired plants and pollute the rest of the world. But in the meantime, we're over here saving the world a little piece of it. So unless you get everybody else involved, if you want to do the Paris Protocol, whatever it is now, the latest one.
What was that in the Super Bowl with, what's the name? It's Sweden, not Sweden.
Norway.
Norway has more electric cars than us.
We do.
And that was very funny and humorous and cool. But what's the, again, what's the agenda?
What's the agenda?
What's the agenda?
Electric cars.
Oh, my gosh. We need to be stepping it up here.
Like, I know this is running towards our end, but down. I went to China a couple years ago, and I went, and I had a guy who took me around we're going around China, and it was a good time to see all this manufacturing that he was doing because I was curious what he was doing. And the bottom line is we go from Shanghai to Ningbo, which is where this guy was based, and you have to go over a 26-mile bridge in between, which is crazy, and it has a rest stop and a hotel halfway through the bridge deal. But anyway, so we're driving south out of Shanghai. Sounds very adventuresome, doesn't it?
Sounds like a movie title.
And I look off in the distance, and knowing what I know about California deal, when I see the black smoke, I'm thinking this is crazy. Something's on fire.
Right.
And as we get closer, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. It turns out to be a smokestack belching out black soot. The size of this one smokestack is over the size of a football field. It is the biggest one I have ever seen in my entire life. Belching black crap into the air with little particulate shiny pieces that are flying out with it. And I'm going like, I can't breathe. And the windows are up, air conditioning's on. I'm going like, this is what we're putting up with. And this is about 4 years ago.
This guy's preaching that it's going to disappear by 2035. It's not. It's not going to be a worthless commodity at all. I also did a little bit of research, and did you know where gasoline originally came from?
No,
I didn't either, and I found this out. A buddy of mine told me this.
From a gas plant?
It was a byproduct of kerosene, because initially they were pumping oil out of the ground and purifying the oil into kerosene, and gasoline was a byproduct.
It's like nitromethane is a byproduct of pesticide production.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Burns your eyes and all that other crap. Pesticide.
I'm so glad I spent so much money on it.
Yeah.
So I don't want to spend a lot of time on this. Yes, and we're not going to be able to fix the world today, unfortunately, because no one's going to listen to
us.
Maybe
by Thursday.
But okay, well, then we should get started.
We got to get started.
So the point is, there should be an alternative viewpoint. There should be other information, and that's what's really lost with the news today. It's like they're just giving you what you should know. Not what we should do is give you all the data and then let you decide what it is. They've already decided for you.
The problem.
So the point is here is like
we are crazy people who just don't want change, and all we want to do is pollute the
world. Right, right. So just to make this somewhat politically correct, I would like to say that I encourage my neighbor across the street, the lady across the street has a Volt, yeah. You know, and I thought it was a great idea,
right.
And I encourage people to go buy an electric car.
Because more gas for my Chevelle.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the point. You know, exactly. It's like, so if you want to go out and save the world, that's great, and there's always going to be a,
well,
you know,
at
least
thing,
in our lifetimes, yes. You know, now maybe my granddaughter, I don't know. That's an interesting question.
Yeah.
But, you know... It's just the area that it's the way it's moving,
yeah.
And that's okay. They're not saying that electric cars are bad. They serve a lot of useful purposes. I mean, for someone who lives 40 miles from the closest gas station, an electric car doesn't make a lot of sense,
no.
Because you just don't have the range. And they can say, well, range is going to get better all the time. It's like, well, I'm not so sure.
No.
You know, we've only been working on this for 10 years maybe,
right.
and range is the limitation. And as my one friend, my one GM engineer also said, he says, you know, the problem with batteries is there's a bunch of little pissed off electrons in there. And they'll go where they want.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not careful, they'll burn your car down. You know, so a lot
That's
of what electric
tricky
vehicles have to deal with is managing all of those little, because they look like little AA batteries.
Yeah.
And there's just thousands of them in there, and all it
you
takes
got that
a
from Saturday Night Live. Did you ever see the one with Julia? What's her name? Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and she has a Mercedes. And there's a deal where it's a Mercedes, and they pop it open, and it's like full of 10,000 AA batteries. And literally, you have an unload button. She hits the unload button, and there's this, I mean, literally, the car is completely consumed in batteries because they just you know pull them out, and they just go.
But that is exactly how it works. That's exactly how it works. It's not a pile of Optima 12-volt batteries. That's not how it works.
No.
So, and then what you get into is, and most people don't even know this, real quickly, then we'll get done with this.
Yeah.
Electric cars, that's DC power. That's DC power, but the motors are AC.
AC, right.
And so you have to have an inverter. Well, guess what happens when you invert? You create heat.
Yeah.
Right? So you got heat from the batteries because you're discharging them and charging them. You're generating heat. You're generating heat in the inverter. And you're generating heat from the electric motor. And as my engineer buddy told me, he says, you know, they have not yet figured out how to cool internally an electric motor because there's no clearances in there. How do you
do
that?
Right.
So you can't run them really hard because then they'll melt down. So there's issues. It's not the panacea that the government wants you to think that it is. And, you know, but not to say that there aren't good reasons to use an electric car in certain applications. But for someone in a real deal, and certainly not for an Iowa farmer trying to combine 100 acres or 1,000 acres, it's not going to happen.
You have to have
an IC engine to do that. It's as simple as that.
I was working with a couple of friends who actually are dealing with converting school buses to electric.
Mm-hmm.
That's the perfect situation.
Absolutely, because they're on a set course.
Yes.
And they know exactly how much energy they'll use. They, they don't vary the course.
They plug in the same place every day.
It's perfect. It's like garbage trucks. Right. Garbage trucks the same way.
And it's the mindset that diesel is dirty. I mean, because of all the times when we were kids and we rode on buses and there was a big black... It's like because they never tuned them.
Right.
So anyway. But anyway.
Because they were misused pieces of crap.
Exactly. Bluebird. Yeah. Bluebird or Thomas. But anyway, but moving to an electric school bus, which is... is where we're going because they actually literally in California are not going to sell diesel powered school buses in 2030. You'll have to have electric.
I want an electric flying car.
Yeah,
there you go.
So, okay, so let's wrap this puppy
up. So I can crash.
You know, we've probably went a little bit too long on that, but I think it's great stuff. And
yeah.
And you know, the hobby is changing, and we're what's the Chinese proverb? May you live in interesting times. You know, that's where we're at right now. We're living
that
in interesting times. It's going to change. I don't want to be that guy that says, you know, back 120 years ago, they'll never replace the horse.
You have to use your old man voice.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't want to be that guy, but at the same time, I still want to have my hot rods. You know, there's 13 engines in the shop right now. I don't want to replace it with electric motors.
But they get used so little. What's the big point?
Exactly.
You know, the bottom line is they're going to go only a few thousand miles a year.
If that. Right. We just play
but they get poked at because they're an easy deal, which is what
that's low hanging fruit.
Because is what the carb guy told me years ago.
Cash for clunker thing.
All
that nonsense.
Exactly.
But so we're not going to change the world today, unfortunately.
No,
no one's going to listen
to
us, but that's okay.
Exactly.
So hopefully you'll enjoy this little segment. We're going to do more of these. We're not going to try and change the world every time. I promise.
No.
We'll have some more fun, and we'll do this again next time, huh?
Sure.
Yeah.
We're on.
The great Richard Jenny said, Don't fry bacon when you're naked.
On that note, there you go.
Unless you have an electric car.